Or nobody would notice that it was there.
No.
Yeah, the Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division for Wednesday, March 19th, 2014 will come to order. First on the agenda, you want to go first, Senator Dahl, or would you like to wait, or how would you like to go? No, you'd rather go first. Senate File 2304. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator.
We have an office right next to each other. We never see each other.
Yeah, I know.
That's unbelievable.
You're busier than I am, or vice versa. But thank you. I do have about five bills up and across the hall, so I appreciate the opportunity to go up first today. This Senate File 2304 is really an exciting initiative, and I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to let the experts talk about it, but this is a bill that I hope that we as a state can get behind and be a leader, and it's going to bring productivity and profitability to agriculture, to our environment, to rural communities. It just has so many ripple effects in terms of the benefits. So I believe, was Bobby King going to go first? We'll let him start his testimony.
Mr. King, just
Mr.
say
Chair,
your name for the record.
Bobby King with the Land Stewardship Project. I was going to talk real briefly about how important we think this effort is. We're a farm and rural organization that has been working for over 30 years on promoting stewardship of the land. And for us, the Forever Green Program gets at the heart of what we need for better stewardship of the land, and that's diversity on the landscape. We need more cover crops that work in Minnesota's climate, available to farmers, that are profitable for farmers to grow, and we need more options for perennial crops. This is really a key element of getting at the water quality problem we have in Minnesota. The MPCA released their nitrate study last year. 73% of nitrates are coming off cropland. Our LSP's analysis is we should not fault farmers for that. We've asked farmers to grow a lot of corn and soybeans, and they've done that. And we haven't given them the tools they need to implement cover crops into these systems. And that's because we don't have enough crops available. The university is probably the only institution in our state that has the capacity to develop these. And I know Professor Weiss and Farmer Carmen Fernholz can talk about it in more detail. But lastly, the PCA report does emphasize that development of cover crops and more perennial crops are going to be necessary to address this water quality issue. And we have to address it in a way that's profitable to farmers. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. King? Okay. Who's next?
Mr. Chair, I believe Professor Donald Weiss from University of Minnesota will be speaking next.
Professor, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm Don Wise from the University of Minnesota, from the Department of Agronomy and Plant Genetics and Shoreview.
Were you always wise before you became a professor?
Well, you've had me in front of committees before, so you know the answer to that.
Can you take a vote on it, you guys?
Don't have them call the vote.
Yeah. Table that one.
Table that, yes.
Professor, go ahead.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to again bring forward this program, what we are calling the Forever Green Initiative. This initiative is really designed to bring along the next generation of crop plants. A lot of you know that my department, the Department of Agronomy and Plant Genetics, brought you corn, soybeans, wheat, and we still bring you wheat. We bring you barley. That was the framing of the agricultural system in this state and within this region of the country. Highly productive system, but we all know what has happened. If you look on the front page of this handout, if you look at that bottom set of slides, you will note that the landscape has changed dramatically over a very short period of time, like 70 years, right? It's moved from a agriculture system that had perennial plants as part of the production system. Why were those perennials there? To feed livestock. We have now separated those two. We now have livestock being produced in feedlots, and the grain is being grown on that land. The alfalfa has been replaced as protein source for that livestock by something that can be shipped. What is it? Soybeans. Nothing wrong with those crops. It but it changed the landscape. You now have a landscape that is entirely made up of, on 95% of the landscape, all annuals, right? Planted in the spring, harvested in the fall. And the slide I would just love to show you is on page 3. Pick out Minnesota on the upper two slides. Look at the date. May 18th to the 31st, June 15th to the 28th. The latter part of June, that landscape is still showing brown and yellow, right? That portion of the landscape is where we produce the corn and soybeans, our annual crops. Move to the next one. By July, it's entirely green. But look, by October, it's brown again. Count the months. July, August, and half of September. That's the only period of time that we have green on the landscape. But forget the green. It's the only time that we have active roots in the soil to hold the nitrate nitrogen. That's the connection back to the pollution control report. Water moves down, nitrate nitrogen moves out into the surface water. There's nothing there to hold it. So this whole initiative that we're talking about here is really designed to fill the brown and do it in a way that not only protects the soil, protects the water, but it also protects farmers. As we all know, we can't afford in the public sector to buy all that land and put it. We don't want to do that. We want to produce crops that are highly profitable to those farmers and also produce those ecosystem services to fill that landscape, to fill that brown. So in this program, basically what we're trying to do is bring the infrastructure that we currently have at the University of Minnesota with an additional investment to bring you this next generation of crops in exactly the same way the public sector brought society corn, soybeans, and wheat. After it was developed, who picked it up? The major seed companies in the world. You know their names. Syngenta, Monsanto. They're the ones that are out there that have taken advantage of that public investment. We're arguing that there needs to be a new public investment in the development of this plant material at this stage that can demonstrate environmental impact as well as new economic opportunities for society, not just rural America, but society as a whole. So I'd like to just give you a couple of examples. You have two handouts. One is this document that I'm talking about, which is a PowerPoint document. The other document is a 2 to 3 page description of each of the plant material programs that are currently in place. So we are not coming to you today saying we have this pipe dream. We do have a dream, but we already have part of that pipeline filled in the initial stages in the development of this plant material. If you look to this side of the room over here, we have a group of faculty, graduate students that are actively engaged in this work. They're actively engaged in this work. When I went to them, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to some of them, and said, you know, this is what we ought to do. We ought to domesticate a new set of plants, the winter annuals and the perennials. Even this group, very creative people, kind of glazed over and said, Don, the types of things that you're talking about will take a century. And then something happened. All the investment this society made in understanding genomes, like the human genome, all of that investment, those billions of dollars, and now has direct application to this work. For example, Kevin Doran sitting over here, a graduate student, sequenced the genome for pennycress in 9 months for less than $75,000. You see what I'm saying? Huge shift of resources to do those things that were a pipe dream just 5 years ago. We now have the ability, and I'm not talking about genetic engineering. I'm talking about tools that can be used in classical breeding in the same way that we developed the cereal grains, the corn, the soybeans in the past. This is having the ability to find those genes that are important to survive the winters here, and we know that's pretty important, right? As well as producing products that have value in the marketplace. So what I'd like to do is just show you a couple of these, if we have time.
Go ahead. Promise to be brief.
I'm sorry?
If you promise to be brief.
And I told you the sign, right? Oh, you know that sign. I'll give you just two examples, if I might. The first one is pennycress. A lot of you know it. If you're involved with farming, you know it as a species that's been in North America for 125 years. Kind of a nuisance. But we have just started to pay attention that it has about 35% oil. It's winter hardy. That seed matures very rapidly. And lo and behold, yes, you can fit it into a corn and soybean rotation to fill that brown. Seed it in the year of seeding the corn. It matures in time to be taken off in the latter part of May. No-till in soybeans without any displacement of corn and soybeans. Increases the profitability of that system and provides environmental protection. All right. The other one that I will just mention is intermediate wheatgrass. It's domestication of a grass that's currently used as a forage. Breeding for seed production. Our partner in that work is General Mills. General Mills has a sustainability program. They are very interested in producing a product from a perennial grain that they can market by saying not only is it healthy, but it's also producing ecosystem services. If you buy this product, it will have a positive impact on the environment. I'll leave you with that. There are other examples that are in those handouts, but they're all based on that idea that we want to give farmers, rather than pointing at the farmers and suggesting that they might be the problem, I would suggest to you they are not. They just don't have options for doing other things on that landscape that are profitable. So, with that, thank you.
So the pennygrass, how do we get them to do that then? How do we get them to do the pennygrass, for example, on the...
We have to develop a pennycress line through our breeding program that will fit that system. We have to figure out how to introduce it into the corn and soybean rotation. We have to figure out how to increase its yield a little bit. So it's the same thing as we do with all of our crops, continue to improve that plant material so it is more profitable to the producer and fits the end consumer.
Your testimony made it sound like we can do it already.
I would hope that I wouldn't have suggested that. But we do have plant material that we can take out and work into a system on a small scale. For example, some of you know me as the guy that came to Minnesota and built the grass seed industry in northern Minnesota. How did we do that? We developed perennial ryegrass lines that were profitable for those farmers. We built that entire industry. That industry is in place. They are now stepping forward, and they're going to be producing the early lines of the intermediate wheatgrass for use by General Mills and for Patagonia in California. Right? But the yields are about two-thirds of spring wheat. We have to continue to increase that so there's greater return to the farmer so it doesn't cost that much to put it into a food product.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Wise, I just have to thank you for that grass seed industry in northern Minnesota. I grew up near Barrette.
Yes.
And I know how introducing some of these crops has changed an area that was a very poor area, and people have found other ways to make money. And I grew up there, and my farm always had small grains. We had winter wheat, barley, clover, flax to keep the soils healthy. And now they're raising trees. So it just everything, what goes around comes around. But thank you for what you've done. But my one little question is, does the continual application of atrazine eventually kill the pennycress?
Chairman, this plant would be susceptible to atrazine. The pennycress would be susceptible to atrazine. If you had atrazine residues in that system, it would do damage to the pennycress.
Wow, what a question that was. Where did that come from?
Huh? Well, the issue she's raising is this is the research that needs to be done. How do you fit these materials into a system that does, in fact, have atrazine in it? How do you work that into the system?
Senator Gingrich.
Maybe more clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair, of where atrazine is applied, when it is applied. And then I also have a question with regards to the colony collapse disorder with the honeybees. Maybe you could comment about that in our area. I know that the bees have been an issue in the last couple of years. At least we've been hearing about it.
Chairman, I'm not qualified to talk about the colony collapse issue. However, it is in the thought patterns about the redesign of these agricultural systems. So if you look at the other examples that I didn't give you, the other examples deals with figuring out how to get a mixture of native plants on the landscape to actually get new sources of nectar and pollen out on the landscape. By just asking people to grow them, some of us will, right? We'll do a plot here and there, but you talk about going out and planting thousands of acres. As legislators, you know what that has taken, right? Purchasing of the land and providing that seed. We have an idea that is led by Adrian Hageman over here in the Metabolomics Lab. We have a program that is designed to look for high-value products, natural products out of prairie plants. Our partners there, General Mills again, Estee Lauder. I'm not the poster child for Estee Lauder. And the Aveda Corporation here in our backyard. What do they want? They want preservatives. They want a new source of preservatives. So here we go. Economic opportunities provided by the development of a commercial use of these plant materials would also give you the opportunity to put more of these native plants. A number of them would be supportive of pollinators and other insects as well, right? That could be part of that landscape. So this is really what we're trying to do, trying to think strategically about how you get more of this diverse plant material on the landscape, but making sure that it has an economic pull.
Senator Westrom.
Chair, Mr. Weiss, I think this is a similar project that we were talking about in LCCMR. How do they overlap, or do they complement each other, or is it the same project? And what happens if you get funded through the LCCMR proposal process?
Mr. Chairman, this is the same project. LCCMR did not fund this project. This is a very comprehensive project, and as you can tell, those of you that know me, we have positioned this idea wherever we think that we can get support for this program, and that's why we have these postdocs and graduate students and faculty over here. What I'm saying is, it's not a pipe dream. We have a pipe. We have things running through that pipe, but that pipe needs to be increased in terms of its capacity to deliver these products. Right? So each one of them is focused as you're developing an enterprise from the basic research all the way through to marketing. And that's the reason I mentioned the end users. They also have to be part of it. But to answer your question directly, we did not get funded through LCCMR for this package.
And Mr. Weiss, have you, with the water quality enhancement that's a part of this proposal or project or this research, have you submitted any application to the legacy funds in clean water? Because it seems like it could be a prime candidate for that as well.
Yes, sir.
Chairman, Senator, we have not figured out how to present this case to legacy. However, we did submit portions of this program to the MDA legacy funds, right? And we just received word, I guess probably shouldn't announce that yet. Probably that's illegal. It appears that some of those proposals have been reviewed in a positive way.
Okay.
That's good. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Senator Tomasini, excuse me.
And Sony rhymes with Tomasini. The Japanese company Sony.
Sorry about that. Anyway, I'm Carmen Fernholz. I operate about a 400-acre diversified cropping farm near Madison, Minnesota. And I'm going to be quick this morning because I think Don has covered a lot, but I'd like to sort of talk from a farmer perspective. I started farming in 1972, and I've been farming even to this day. But I'd like to tell you the story of the chisel plow. 1945, a local implement dealer came out to our farm and talked to my dad about using the chisel plow to do the major tillage on the farm. And, of course, it was a totally new concept. Everybody was doing the moldboard plow, and how could you do a chisel plow? Because you're going to the crop residue, everything wasn't going to work. But to make a long story short, within 15 years, with the help of engineering, with the help of extension, with the help of the university, the chisel plow now is the accepted mode of primary tillage across most of the Midwest. And we know it took care of what at that time was a major soil problem, namely soil erosion. Well, what we've seen now in the last 10 years and 15 years, as Dr. Wise alluded to, that we have a lot less diversified landscape. We have much larger fields, quarter sections of one crop. And not only that, but as he referenced, a good number of months out of the year, those acreages are literally laying bare. And if you would have traveled to western Minnesota this winter, you would have seen black snow. Absolutely. And so it really points up the issue that because of the changing landscape, we have to look for new tools, new ways, not to change necessarily the cropping system that we have, but to protect the soils that we do have. And we look at cover crops and the various cropping ideas that Dr. Wise is putting forth. I think we can see that there is this possible benefit. I spent 3 days in Omaha in mid-February with about 300 soil scientists, researchers, SCS people, NRCS people, and industry talking about how can we incorporate more covers on the landscape. When you have a gentleman like Howard Buffett saying we need to do something, there is definitely an issue. And we're seeing it. The other thing is we have seen where even the soil services of the country are talking about soil health. And I've had a good number of my neighbor friends and farmers talk to me about the issue that they're seeing with the lack of decay of some of the crop residues. And part of the reason is because we're losing a diversified microbial system in the soil. And so the cover crops aren't breaking down. And this is impacting the cropping system. But I think the major challenge for adopting or even adapting any kind of cover crop system is what I call the I-94 and I-80 corridor. And it's the area from Interstate 80 all the way up to I-94 where cover crops have a limited time in which they can be effective. Because we have the corn and soybeans coming off in late September and October, and cover crops to get in there aren't going to have much of a growth. And in the spring, we want to get out there and crop as early as we can. And so this is really where we do need the work. This is where we need the research and the help, the tools, I guess is what I'm saying. The tools. I talk to farmers a lot, and many of them are definitely interested in cover crops. In fact, I was supposed to be at a session yesterday in St. Cloud where we're going to be with the corn and soybean growers, and they are interested in covers, but they don't have the tools. I call it the hassle factor. They don't know how they can adapt it to their systems. And so those things all come into play. And I think if we look, if we go back to the story of the chisel plow and how that has been adapted over the years, I think we could say that 5, 10, 15 years from now, we could be saying the same thing about covers, that we have worked out the way that we can, in fact, adapt it to our agricultural cropping systems in this country. And so I think any legislative support that we can give can supply a part of what we're going to need. We can be team players with the university, with the public sector, with the government agencies, and really do the work that I think needs to be done with cover crops.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from the committee? Okay. Do we have another testifier?
I don't know. Mr. Chair, is there, I think maybe you, anybody wanted to say one more word?
Yeah, Mr. Peterson, I think.
Or someone else? Just two more, very, very brief.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we too support this and feel it's a good investment. Our main interest in this bill has been the cover crops, and Mr. Fernholz mentioned that. I can't tell you how much has changed in the last year. Where we just had a meeting with our county presidents, and that cover crops and the interest in cover crops is probably the number one issue. And it's interesting because people are starting to see the help that it can give and the soil health, and it can contribute to their bottom line, which that's what it's all about a lot of times. And that's interesting where farmers start paying attention. But we do need help, and we do need the research, and we like the university doing that. Two other quick things. We'd like increased forages. A lot of our farmers are trying to do Griffin type of grazing systems, haying, biomass type systems. All the forages are all really important and would be helped by this. And finally, I just mentioned I have a lot of pennycress was mentioned, and we Farmers Union a couple of years ago we worked with a company to try to get pennycress going, and we had several farmers try to grow it in Isani and Aiken, and Representative Rood's, or Senator Rood's not here right now, but we had a lot of farmers were interested in it, and they had some issues with the varieties and with also the processing and things, but the interest is there, but we need the help and the assistance, and so I think this is very valuable, so thank you.
Thank you. You said there's somebody else, Senator?
Just one more, very briefly.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Steve Morris, Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and I'll be very brief because you've had a lot of really wonderful testimony here. Our organization is a coalition of more than 70 environmental conservation groups, the largest of its kind in the state. And just a couple of things. We have a number of folks who are working on water quality issues, and that's what brings me here today. We support this legislation because, as Mr. Peterson just said, this is about economically viable farming systems, so farming systems that are profitable and economically viable to do. But it's really about the next generation of thinking, is how do we get to these multi-benefits so it's not only good for agricultural production, but it's going to deliver us vastly improved soil health, water quality, and habitat all the way around. So it's kind of a four-way win. A quadruple win, if you would, and we wholeheartedly support this. And the last point I'll make is that in order for this type of research to go forward, and there are many instances, as many of you, some of you know, I was a former apple grower before I got too involved in this political life.
Did not know that.
Yes, second generation. But the apple industry, like the wine industry and the grass industry, is all built, and the soybeans to a large part too, built on research from the University of Minnesota, where the university developed varieties that were viable in our climate. And that's what this is about. But it takes a sustained effort. You can't do it on a one-off LCCMR. You can't do it on a one-off grant fund someplace. What you need is base funding over a long period of time. So a lower amount is better for a longer time than the other way around. But it's that base funding that's really important to deliver the results for the state. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Okay. Senator Dahl, any final comments?
No, and I appreciate your indulgence today. And again, I know it's there's a little price tag, but I think, again, this will pay off in great numbers.
And I think this is a tails thing, right? Okay. All right. Senator Dahl, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Conan. Senator Housley's trying to make you look good up there, Senator.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I get a lot of help with that, which I appreciate.
Senate File 2333, welcome to the committee, Senator Conan.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and thanks for giving us some time to present this bill today. This is the Let's Go Fishing bill. And what it does is appropriate $400,000 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and then it would be a grant then to Let's Go Fishing. The grants must be matched from non-state sources, which can be either cash or in kind.
Excuse me.
And the purpose is to provide outreach to seniors, youth and veterans, and costs for establishing and recruiting new chapters. And Mr. Chairman, I have with me today Mr. Joe Holm with Let's Go Fishing, who would like to say a few words. And also, I would like the committee to note that there's a lot of volunteers here today, too. And maybe we'll have another couple of people speak also, depending upon what you had in mind.
Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record, and if you want to introduce some people, go right ahead.
Sure, be glad. Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Holm, the director of the Let's Go Fishing organization. I'm very proud to be here today representing 2,350 volunteers. We've got volunteers from Alexandria area, Wilmer, Eden Prairie, people that have helped out in Stillwater, and at some point, we have more time. I would love to load up the busloads of people that would love to speak to how this program has impacted their life. Seems like every person that I have talked to has been able to relate to the program because we all have friends, family, relatives, that water has been a huge part of their life, but for one reason or another, they can't get out like they used to be. Whether they're getting older, loss of a spouse, no one to go with. Water, the way, the impact that it's had in individuals' lives are really hard to put into words until you get it taken from you. Then you know you've got something that's very jugular, near and dear to your heart, that is no longer a part of your life. This organization, now going into its 13th year, has come a long ways since we've been here last. And the whole purpose of the organization is to enrich the lives of seniors through fishing and boating activities that really strengthen communities, build relationships. The smile, the laughter, the joy that it gives individuals is incredible. I'd like to first, those pages are pages 2 and 3 as you're reviewing them. From the state's perspective, I would really like to speak to, because it's important to us as we work very hard to be accountable. We have a CPA auditing firm on an annual basis since we started, go through this entire organization. And on page 4, you'll see that I would like to highlight that in the past, Let's Go Fishing has received $975,000 from the state of Minnesota, and I'd like to review with you the results from this investment. 108,581 total people on the water, 6,500 youth, classroom, and on the water fishing, over 29,000 hours of volunteer time per year, 219,982 total hours to be exact, with 2,350 volunteers. There's been a full safety and training program for our volunteers, which is a requirement. LGF has purchased $1.3 million of equipment using no state funding. Economical benefits and annual CPA accounting. And we have kept track, and I've got approximate, but we can take 10 guests out per outing. Some of these outings, every single person on the pontoon has purchased a fishing license that normally wouldn't have. Others, if it's a nursing home group, none of them would have, because they are exempt or they're over age 90. But as close as we can get it, approximately 20% buy fishing licenses. That would equate to $20,200 at $18, and you can see the math going right on through there. The state of Minnesota net cost per person is $3.33. From here, the investing in our seniors, we've expanded to youth and veterans and the disabilities into hospice. What's been very interesting and is a lot of our active older adults who really feel that they are washed up or have nothing to offer, the mentorship opportunities that our senior community can give to this next generation. Our senior veterans reaching out to our younger veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's been very, very, it could stand alone just on that. The youth, we've got a video that even schools have been showing the youth. But the impact that the seniors have once they are commissioned then to reach out to the next generation. So this is a senior organization. We all, in fact, in this room will probably be there at some point where we can't get out there like we used to. And believe me, the individuals that we have taken out, it's touched their life, and the quality of life is tremendous. The page 5 is a number of testimonials. Hubert H. Humphrey III was a huge activist, and the AARP still is. And the individuals that this is the only activity that they can do in their life. The state of Minnesota has been kind to the program in years past. We thank you for that. We don't think there's another way to get somebody out in the water for $3. The chapters from across the state from this map right here all pitch in and work very hard in contributing to keep this organization alive. The chapters individually pay for the pontoon boats. That is all raised at a chapter level. All the chapters all pay for fixed operating expense, which helps us in the insurance, in our auditing, in our marketing, our website, as well as all of these volunteer hours that you're seeing that is coming from volunteers from across the state. It's really helping this program. What I'd like to say is that on the last page, on page 6, is on Senate File 2333. Let's Go Fishing is requesting $400,000. The use of the funds is resources to maintain and grow this organization. It takes a lot of work to maintain and to grow this, and the challenge is just going to continue to get larger for the state of Minnesota as we're seeing the baby boomer age wave coming through. Number one, there's a staffing need. Two, new chapters in the travel and training. And three, existing chapter support. So we're asking you to help us serve our Minnesota seniors who actively supported their state as taxpayers their whole life. The quality of life that fishing and boating gives those in Minnesota is second to none. And just because we get older, cannot get out like we used to, it would be great if we could make it possible so we don't take that away from them, because this is the only platform that many of these have. The seniors have stated to me many times, and I want to just bring this up in a gentle way, how high are state taxes? One of the highest in the nation. And our seniors will stay here for the benefits that the state gives them. They honestly see this as a true benefit in holding their roots in Minnesota and not moving south. And I think that's huge. They're looking at the quality of life, and I really believe that this program is in the best interest of Minnesota. Since we lost the funding from you approximately 3 years ago, the organization has not had the resources to grow. We did not add one chapter in the state of Minnesota this last year. It was two the year before that, when it was always 3 to 5 chapters that we grew, which are numbers of people that we can impact. So I ask that you keep that in mind. The one that we did add last year was out of state. It has to do with other states looking at Minnesota as a model, as an example of what they would like to do. And with this state being so rich in our resources of water, I ask you to keep that in mind with pulling beside our friends, family, and our neighbors in their desire to stay out in the water. So I thank you, and I think there may be some additional comments.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the witness? Senator Housley, would you like to make a comment?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I will just briefly tell you how I got involved with Let's Go Fishing. It was in 2010, and they asked if I wanted to volunteer on one of the pontoon boats. And I said, but I don't fish. I don't like fish. I don't want to like fish. He said that...
you can buy them at Cub Foods.
I don't even eat fish. I'm a chicken. And so they have excursions that you can volunteer on or seniors can take that are just excursions, not fishing excursions. So I said, sure, I'll volunteer on one of the excursions. And we went out on the St. Croix River, and I'm talking to the folks there from the Good Samaritan Assisted Living Home in the area. And this older gentleman, Ed, he was 85 years old, and he's smiling ear to ear. And I was like, Ed, what are you so happy about? And he said, do you ever feel like you're breathing air that nobody's ever breathed before? And it just killed me, because we forget that they're cooped up, they don't get out, and especially to be out on the water and breathing the fresh air. This program, I can't even tell you, just a lady from the Minnesota Utility Investors outside just gave me a big hug when she found out I was involved with this organization, because it's the highlight of her whole summer. Her whole year is just getting out on the water. And a couple of them will take a few times because it helps. It's therapeutic. It helps with their depression, and we bring family members out. So ended up being the president of the St. Croix Valley chapter, and now they got me to be on the board. But it really, really, I know, hook, line, and sinker, and I still don't fish. But it is a really, really great program, and anything you can do to help out would be awesome. Thank you.
She likes ice, so you might want to get some
ice. I like ice.
And bring her out to do some ice fishing. Senator Hosmick.
You beat me to the joke, so I...
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. First, I think we should make a requirement of granting the money that Senator Housley has to go out fishing. Then
are you proposing an amendment?
I better not. I'm getting the look. But no, the serious question I have, Mr. Chair, and number one, I think you have a great program. Don't give. What I'm curious about, though, is besides the state monies, where else do you get funding from? And I was looking through your information. You may have stated that, and I missed it. I apologize. But that was my question.
Yeah. It's a good question. The other fundings, $150,000 of the fundings a year come straight from the chapters. The 30 chapters each submit $5,000 a year. That covers the fixed operating expenses. There's a lot of efficiencies through the insurance and the marketing and the supplies by all working together on that. So that's part of it. This Saturday, the 22nd at the Medina Ballroom, for anyone who may be interested, is our annual banquet. That's a fundraiser as well. And We work very hard on that. The question has always been, where should the monies come from? We're all impacted. If it comes from natural resources, they'll say, but there's social benefits. There's people with depression, isolation, loneliness, that it helps. The social issues, well, it says the word fish in it, so it's resources. So where should the fundings come from? So we work very hard, the volunteers all across the state, as well as the staff that's on board with this program, which I'd like to state because I think that's very important. We have one full-timer and one part-timer, so we are very highly leveraged. Mm-hmm. Very highly leveraged with two leveraged. The importance of the training going forward, the importance of helping the organizations, keeping good leadership is all critical. And that we have to have some staffing, or it will fall apart.
Hey, thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward, Senator. And you know, I'm thinking, you know, we have certainly a very active group in Alexandria, and I've been working with him over the years. And I'm thinking of other chapters that come before us, other organizations, outdoor-related, like Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, that come in and ask for dollars. And it seems like we don't hesitate at all. I mean, we all like hunting. We all like, you know, this and that. And they do a lot of work. They also have a lot of fundraising abilities. This seems to fit very, very well in that category. I don't think you've been here that many times. That few dollars over that many years is quite remarkable, actually. And I think, you know, and Mr. Chair, you're part of this now for sure, being the chair of the committee, and when I was, retention and recruitment of fishing folks and hunting folks in the state of Minnesota is huge. And to see the smile on the face of somebody 80 years old and older is certainly heartwarming, but the kids are starting to be part of your process now and your program. And I don't have to tell anybody sitting in this room or at this table for sure that we need to. And the guys in the bottom here, the Ron Linders and the Babe Winkelmans and all the professionals, will tell you that we need to get these kids out there and experience the tremendous resources we have here and get them off the couch and get a fishing rod in their hand instead of this, as we call them sometimes, gamers. They're constantly running games and doing this and that. They should be actually pulling a fish in and learning how to clean it and going along with some seniors, quite frankly. Learn from the seniors that we all have learned from over the years. So I think it's a great program. I support it, and I wish the committee would support it as well. And thank you guys for all the work you do.
You want to say something, sir?
Yeah.
Okay.
My name is Ron Fenlon. And I'm the president of the Alexandria Lakes Area chapter of Let's Go Fishing. I've only been a resident of the great state of Minnesota for 8.5 years. But I've been involved in Let's Go Fishing for, I think this will be the fifth season. I was recruited by one of my neighbors to see if I would like to serve on the board of directors. I attended some meeting and said, sure, I'd like to. It's a great organization. And then I was recruited by our former president to take his place so he could be our director of operations. The one thing I will say is the benefits of being involved in Let's Go Fishing are in the Alexandria area, we have over 150 volunteers that will either captain the boat or will serve as a helper when we're taking people out fishing or boating. One of the things we do, of course, when we have people out fishing is we bait the hook and we take the fish off. And let me just give you one story that happened to us last summer. We had a gal from one of the assisted living homes that had moved here from the state of New York. She had never been on a boat. She had never held a fishing pole in her hand, and obviously she had never gone fishing. We baited the hook, and the first time out, gave her the fishing pole, and she caught a 5-pound bass. Now, I can tell you, that woman, every time there is a sign-up sheet at her home where she lives, she signs up. She is hooked on fishing. We have the same experience with young kids. In one of our training sessions, a mother had to lead her son in with her hand wrapped around his neck because he did not want to be there. He went through the 3 hours of classroom training in which he learned how to tie a knot. Myself, having never been a fisherman, I've learned how to tie a knot after attending that training session. And he sat through the 3 hours of instructions, and then he got to go on the boat 3 times to fish. The last time he came off the boat, he had tears in his eyes because he thought he'd never get to go fishing again. But we told him, don't worry, son. We'll be there to take you out again. And I hear reports where that young man is on the docks in downtown Alexandria fishing whenever he gets an opportunity to go downtown and do that. He's found something he loves. And I'll guarantee you, he will be a fisherman for life. So the thing that I enjoy most about this is the people you get involved with, not only the folks that go on the boat, but the folks that are our captains and our helpers and our volunteers. And understanding the generosity of the Alexandria community, who have helped us pay for 2 boats. We operate 2 pontoons in the summertime. And there are days and both of those boats are on at least 3 outings apiece. Like, that's 6 outings on a day, any given day. And one of the things I remember distinctly, Jim Schobro had me go with him to be a helper. He was the captain of the boat. And Jim Taddy, who just retired as our Alexandria city manager, he and his wife and his son and daughter and their grandkids would come to Alexandria in the latter part of May, of June, to celebrate Dad's and Grandpa's birthday. And they always do it on one of our boats. And that is a really, really rewarding experience to go with those people. So I have 4 sons, and they're all 4 hockey nuts. And we moved to North Dakota from Michigan. And so I could not avoid being involved in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts and the West Fargo Hockey Association and Junior Achievement. But Let's Go Fishing is the most rewarding and fun thing I've ever done in my life. Thanks.
More than hockey?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, is that saying this is appropriation is in danger?
Well, if you're doing ice fishing, I suppose we can equate the two somehow. So, go ahead.
Terry Egan. I'm president of one of the latest chapters of Let's Go Fishing in Eden Prairie. I didn't get the memo about the dress code. So.
We won't hold it against you.
We started our chapter about a year and a half ago, and it takes about a year for a chapter to become financially stable. And we wouldn't be able to do it without the administrative help and the promotion from the statewide organization. And so we do buy all of our own equipment. But as of today, Eden Prairie's raised $70,000. And that goes towards our equipment, our boat, promotion. It's a budget of about $14,000 a year to run a boat. And then the communities really get behind it. We've gotten a lot of donations from American Legions, Lions, Optimist Clubs, Rotary Clubs, and also the city. The city of Eden Prairie has dedicated Lakeshore and has written a grant for us to get a dock and boat lift and other equipment. So once this gets into the communities, it just grows like the wheat crops you were talking about earlier. I mean, it's amazing. And you can tell he's not unique to the emotion that happens when you get out on the trips. I've experienced it myself. It's just very heartwarming. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other? You want to say something?
I want to be sensitive to our time. If I could take one more minute.
One more minute.
Chairman. Okay. Where all this is going is we've got a huge baby boomer age wave coming in the state of Minnesota. In 10 years, there will be more people aged 60 years of age and older than all of our kids K through 12 combined. That's what the facts show us. So with this program not only serving our active older adults, it's very key who is going to reach out to our next generation. Our next generation of the youth is spending, on the average, we've all read the facts, 9 hours a day on electronics. If you want to make an impact in people's lives, you have to find a way to connect with the people. That's what the Let's Go Fishing is doing, is it's finding a way to connecting with with the next generation and getting people out to enjoy the waters. Our numbers for the waters are going down. We are getting additional licenses, which I would like to think would help the Department of Natural Resources. Senator Housley would be one of those that are buying a fishing license that never did before. We have got numbers of those. So that is a good thing. The other thing is that it is mandatory to wear a life jacket on the pontoon. Our volunteers are trained that all the volunteers come off the pontoon and on the shore, and they go on the people before they even go on the dock. So we're very conscious to have things safe and secure, and we have found that the kids have desired for a long time not only to go fishing, but they want to get out on the boats, experience on the water, the electronics on the boats, the underwater camera, really helping the next generation. So we want to thank you for your consideration of this bill.
Okay. I think the DNR wants to add something here or subtract something. I'm not sure what, but one more testifier. Mr. Holm, can you just let Mr. Meyer come up? Welcome, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We've been working with the Let's Go Fishing Foundation for probably the past decade, and we do applaud their efforts. It is a great organization. They do great work. As Mr. Holmes said, they've received almost $1 million in funds from the Game and Fish Fund since 2004, I believe. Each time that we've talked about that in the legislature, it's been brought up that this is the last time we need money, things like that. It's something we need to determine if this is an organization we want to keep funding through the legislature. General fund, obviously, we prefer. We don't oppose the general fund appropriation. We would oppose using Game and Fish Fund dollars for that. We also hear from other organizations like this that want some type of funding. So one thing to consider would be a competitive grant program that would allow other organizations that take elderly, disabled, youth members of our community out hunting and fishing as well. Lastly, if this appropriation is to go forward at the $400,000 level, we would request that some funding be appropriated us to manage the grant. There is a lot of accounting and work that needs to go on, similar to that we do with Outdoor Heritage, Parks and Trails Legacy, or LCCMR dollars. So those are just some points to consider as well as this moves forward.
How do you do it now?
Mr. Chairman, there's an appropriation out of each of those funds for us to do that. I can get you a number what it would be. If you look at the different bills, I think it's roughly 3% of the funds would probably be needed to administer the grant over the lifetime of the grant for auditing and purposes of that.
Okay. All right. Any comments or questions, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, legislative auditor would be overseeing this if there's going to be state dollars expended. Am I incorrect? I mean, at any given time, we can have that area audited. I mean, we get their yellow slip every year to fill out, and if there's problems, they testified now that they actually have a CPA that does their auditing now. Would not be suffice at all for the DNR?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, our Office of Management and Budget Services does substantial oversight and administration as well. Just the processing of the dollars and making sure that match is there is something the DNR would do. The legislative auditor would review our files of the case. They wouldn't do the actual auditing of the grant project. The auditor's work is done after the fact. Our work would be done to ensure that they're in compliance with the conditions of the terms of the grant as those dollars are appropriated.
And just one follow-up, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm sorry I stepped out of the room, Mr. Meyer, when you were testifying, but what is the Game and Fish Fund spending on recruitment and retention right now?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't have those figures in front of me right now. I can certainly get that for you.
It is
an important part to us. We aren't spending enough, but it's something that we need to figure out. How do we do more and with more different groups as well?
What is that budget? About $190 million? Game and Fish Fund?
Chairman, Mr. Mueller might have more specific information. I believe it's a little bit more than that, but it does fund many different operations, including our enforcement division, water rec, places like that.
You probably got $400,000 clinging around there somewhere, huh?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the bill is for general fund dollars.
I see that. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, you certainly agree that hooking youngsters is going to help the DNR budget, the DNR fund, in years to come. I mean, through Pittman Bowes, we can't argue with that. So somebody, a group like this statewide that seems to be quite successful, is certainly going to add to that, I would think. Would you agree or disagree?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this group is a fantastic organization. The work they do is phenomenal. The question is, they've received $1 million so far. Is this something that should be going on for one group, or do we try to expand it to other opportunities as well? And that's a decision you all need to make. We hear from other organizations that they would like the same thing. They haven't been as organized or as upfront in coming up to the Capitol, but I know the need is out there. And it's something that the department needs to try to figure out. How do we deal with that as well?
Okay. Real quickly, if I could. Could you dispute with me then, maybe with your figures, when you get those figures to me, that the DNR's, the dollars that they're spending on recruitment and retention is less or more than $3.33 a piece? That's the figure I'd like to see from the DNR.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Westrom.
Keep it going. Mr. Chair, just a question for the author. I see there's only three authors on there. Wondering if you're okay with adding another author.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am.
Who are the three authors? I only see two.
I thought it was Gizelka and Ingebrigtsen.
One by my name. Senator,
just a comment, not a question. I see that this program is very good. If it worked with young people and getting people to go fishing, it will develop our economy, for the state of Minnesota. And I just wish the Mr. Holm the best and the chapter the best. And I also want to express a word of encouragement to working with citizens in the metro area as well. I know that the map is mainly outside skirt of the metro, and there's round table that intercept each other. I mean, round circle that intercept each other. But I'd like to express a word of encouragement to work with senior members in the metro area.
And Senator Herr is a fisherman, too.
Yes, I am. And I did, when I was in grad school, I developed something like this to get the computer techie to go out fishing. And
very good. Okay, any other comments or questions? Four authors now? Yeah, so who's the fourth?
He can.
Okay, so we only have one spot left, Senator Westrom. So you better get your. All right. Okay.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Okay. There's no further comments or questions, and we'll lay over Senate File 2333 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Okay, Senator Westrom, you got the last bill, Senate File 2150.
Take a while, this one. Huh?
Make it quick.
I'm trying to get an out of them. What's the one thing they use for?
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill should be a quick one. We heard this bill last year. It deals with an energy efficiency grant that was in the final omnibus bill for the city of Morris and a ethanol plant that they have as an employer in their community. All along in the discussions, they were willing and able to do a one-to-one match with any dollars that the state would offer. And in the final negotiations of a conference committee to make the bills balance, the number of $1.25 million got reduced to $750,000. And the match number never got dropped. And so we introduced this bill just to clarify that, and that's the gist of the bill, and that's the extent of it. It's just an oversight in the conference committee report from last year.
Senator Westrom, don't you want don't you want more money put into this project?
What's that?
Don't you want more money put into the project? Seems to me it would be better off if you matched it with 1.25.
Well, yes. Well, Mr. Chair, yes. If that option's on the table, it's all open for discussion. One number has to change.
Okay.
And Mr. Seck is here if you want any comments. There's a letter from the City of Morris and the manager of the plant that was passed around. I had gotten that from them. That's the extent of the bill.
Okay, does anybody have any questions or comments? So, should we move this out of here? We better keep this here just in case we need it. So we'll lay it over for
possible inclusion
in an omnibus bill, okay?
All very right. Good.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay. And actually, Senator Spohr, you look like you want to say something.
No.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. Then we don't have any more meetings this week, right? Okay. And Monday we'll be doing. Do we know what we're doing?
Mr. Chair, we have a number of bills that are being sent to us from other policy committees that we will be hearing on Monday.
All right. Okay. Then meeting adjourned.